him this afternoon because I think I went after him last Monday in class, so he's out to get me. Anyway, be it as it may, Baruch Hashem. It is December 11th, 2011, and I want to say hello to all those in front of me, and I want to say hello to the many, many who are listening. And I was very moved at the Kotel from Lakewood. They came over to me. They told me, you don't realize how many Talmidim you have in Lakewood. I said, all right, Baruch Hashem, I learned in Lakewood. I'm happy to hear I have Talmidim. I know in Satna I have, so if I have in Satna, I can Lakewood, why not? Etc. Anyway, be it as it may, everyone is talking about the latest Wahyu winds up in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Daily News, the New York Post. I can tell you that the Kotel people, you know, as many put it, the Agudat Yisrael convention that I poked a little fun at last Monday, they're laughing all the way to the bank right now. I don't want to go into great detail, but, you know, sexual misbehavior has been with us since the creation of man. And I can tell you in the late 60s, when I was teaching Uptown, the following incident happened, and you can check it out. I think it made the New York Times. But in the dormitory, some student put up a pornographic poster, and Rav Heschel Schechter was walking by, and they showed it to him, and he ripped it off in anger. And this kid wanted to sue the yeshiva, freedom of speech. So here you are so many years later, and a similar story happens, except now it's not just a pornographic poster, but showing you where we're at in the world today. You know, college kids are living together, and Stern College and Yeshiva College and all that anonymous lady wrote. Whether it really happened or not, or whether it was just expressing her conflicts, you know, that's a question. They're giving it to psychologists already to study her article, their various opinions. But I just want to say one thing. Look, I'm in favor of freedom of speech 100%. But you have to have a certain responsibility. If you're a student at Yeshiva University, you harm the yeshiva by this publicity. You harm them simply on a very elementary level. We're in a very difficult financial situation today. The world is going under financially. I don't have to tell you. You know the news as well as I know the news. And the money for charity is limited. And people today, you know, give where they want to give. But it's not only that. Today you have a cadre of multimillionaires who are real Torah Jews. It didn't exist when I was growing up. If you're familiar with Rothkopf's original work, Bernard Revel, Builder of American Jewish Orthodoxy, you'll see that when Yeshiva and Yeshiva College honored Einstein and honored Governor Lehman, there was a terrible outcry. How do you honor people like this who are not Shomer Shabbos? On the other hand, by honoring Governor Lehman, Senator Lehman, Herbert S. Lehman, a nice reformed Jew, Albert Einstein, I need not tell you it brought in money for the yeshiva. Today, you have multimillionaires who are deeply offended when they read something like this. They, you know, we can give our money elsewhere. We mentioned Lakewood, we mentioned other places. And really, I feel bad for the yeshiva. You know, freedom of speech is wonderful. I'm not opposed to it. I advocate freedom of speech, but a person has to have certain limits. A person has to have a certain sense of responsibility. And to harm the very well from which you're drinking, I don't have to tell you what Chazal say about that. So that's why I feel very bad for the yeshiva, that suddenly they're caught up with all this publicity, with the New York Times, with the Daily News, with the New York Post, with every Anglo-Jewish newspaper has picked it up, will pick it up. And of course, it makes yeshiva look bad. On the other hand, I have to say, there are sinners all over. I don't want to go into detail. I can tell you stories out of Satmar and out of Lakewood and out of Tera Vidas. I can tell you stories that I saw with my own eyes. So there's sinners all over. It doesn't mean the institution is bad. We don't succeed entirely. If we succeeded entirely, we would be angels. We wouldn't be Amati Bekabzi, Kol Adam Kozev. We're not angels. But on the other hand, a student has responsibility. It's your institution. It's your school. Why do you harm it? Okay, that's my reaction. I feel very bad for yeshiva. With all their problems, suddenly Richard Joel gets hit with this. It's unfair. But that's life. And yeshiva will triumph, I hope, and come out in dignity. Okay, I've said, by the way, Rabban should relate to sex, and I did relate to it, and I did give lectures on it, so it's not that I'm skimming the issue. I just want to teach what I want to teach tonight, but if Rabban should relate to the whole concept of sanctity and marriage and responsibility and love, and maybe if we know what love is about, we'll have a lot less divorce, and the ability to compromise and to care for someone else. Well, I can tell you one story about Reb Naftali Amsterdam, was a Talmud Muvhak of Reb Yisrael Salanter, one of his three greatest Talmudim. So Reb Naftali Amsterdam came in Aliyah, his wife died, and living in Yerushalayim, he married a woman who was a number of years younger, figuring that she would take care of him in his old age. And she was honored to be married to a great Talmud Chacham, a great Tzaddik, the Helsinki Rav, Reb Naftali Amsterdam. So, you know, no one, Rabbi Belkin used to say, no one has a mortgage on the Ribbono Shel Olam. She died right after their marriage, a few years later, months later, she took ill and was bedridden for many years. And he took care of her like it was the wife of his youth, whom he married at the age of 16 and had been... They had been the husband and wife for 60-plus years. And they asked Reb Naftali, you're so devoted to this woman. Basically, she's a stranger. How long were you married to her? And he said, what's the question? It's Gemilat Chesed. She's a human being. And every time I'm nice to her and I take care of her, it's Gemilat Chesed. And boy, that was a powerful answer. And that was Reb Naftali Amsterdam. That was the Muslim movement. Now, let's move. It's very exciting, the material today. But let's just remind you, so we saw last week Rav Avadya, who can't make his peace with the fact that there are Ashkenazim in the world, particularly in the state of Israel. So Rav Avadya, when he agrees finally that a Svadiya married to an Ashkenazi has to follow Ashkenazi practice, she can't upset her husband by cooking rice and beans on Pesach, but when she goes to her father's house, she can eat whatever she wants. She reverts to being a Sfadiyar again. So you have here, the Gemara talks about, you all learned the sigyas of Chatzi Evet, Chatzi Ben Chorin, right or wrong. So here you have Lefamim, an Ashkenaziyah, Ulefamim a Sfadiyah, and particularly in Eretz Yisrael, you can't but Rav Ovadia. Here in Eretz Yisrael, basically we should all be Sfadim, because the Mara, the Ara of Eretz Yisrael was the base Yosef. No, husband's alive. He's there too. I raised the question. That's what I said. Well, he could eat, but he can't eat the beans and the rice. He can eat from the kalim, yeah. He can eat from the kalim. That already we have true, but no one is machmi. It goes back to the Truma Tadeshan, a Rishon.
So
that's what Rav Avadya Paskins. That's what I said. That's correct. I said I raised the issue last week. Oh, you went here at the airport. You went. I would imagine not. I would imagine not. But if you ask me, if I were the Ashkenazi husband and I had a Sephardic wife, I wouldn't. You'll see later today when I quote Rav David Halevi and my personality, I would let her eat whatever she wants. Don't embarrass your father. In other words, if you're Rav Ovadia's son-in-law and you're an Ashkenazi from Panovich, Vasreta, Gishmaki Yiddish, and Rav Ovadia doesn't speak Yiddish, it's interesting. I told you, I told the class that at the, I videoed it at the big convention many years ago where Agudat Yisrael has to decide who will be the prime minister and Rav Shach is speaking. The Belzer Rebbe is bending over to Rav Ovadia and whispering in his ear a Hebrew translation of what Rav Shach is saying. So when he breaks into Yiddish. So Rav Ovadia, you know, you're back in your father's house, don't embarrass your father. Now, then we saw Reb Meisha, a very fascinating tshuva where a woman was raised, and you have to understand the person is raised a certain way. It's hard for them. In other words, someone who's raised in Hasidus and a beard becomes so important. Lubavitch data in the new book, in the new, my son-in-law had a long talk with me Shabbos of why I'm upset with the new book. He found it great. I said, no, the second part is wonderful. The first part I'm upset with. And he goes crazy. They go crazy after the Rebbe that he trimmed his beard. No, what's so bad about trimming your beard? But what's so bad? I trim my beard too. What's so bad about trimming your beard? But I'll explain to you. I think I explained this. I'll just repeat it quickly. I once studied, why are the Hasidim so makpid on long payas? And the answer is very simple. That if God told you to have payas, it's a sign that God loves payas. So a guy like myself, I'm Yotze here even more than the Rambam. If you know Rashi and the Rambam, I'm Yotze very nicely. But if you want payas, God wants payas. So the same thing with a beard. Chabatnikim don't touch their beard. Don't trim their beard. So if you're raised a certain way, it's hard for you to envision, again, at the Kotel a number of years ago. It happened to me a few times, but a number of years ago, something very bad happened at the Kotel. My students did something I didn't like. I came down to the Kotel Friday night. I daven early, so it's quite early. And Chabad comes over to me, did you put on, are you Jewish? Did you put on tefillin? So I say, I never missed a day. Can I inherit, 60, 70 years, whatever it is, I haven't missed a day to put on tefillin. Thank God, David, this should enable me always, and I should never miss a day. So I walked on, I answered the kid. I told him, the kid was happy. So my students went over to him and told this Chabadnik, must be a Baal Tshuva with a beard, Chabad Gab. Do you know who you just asked to put on? Do you know Rafa Kesed? The guy fainted. I said, why did you do that to that kid? That kid, he sees someone with a baseball cap, without a beard, without payas, without black clothes, and you're telling him this is, you're giving him baloney, says Echad Migadola Yisrael. You understand? It's hard for a kid who grew up that way. The same thing, and this is important, Mintapadman Mitlaid. I learned this from the Rav. The Rav gave me so many precious gifts. But one of the most precious, you don't force your will upon someone else. Baruch Hashem, we're all Shomrei Shabbos. But so many, you stand for Kiddush, you sit for Kiddush. I remember I told you 1,000 times, the Rav gave shir after shir after shir, why you have to sit for Kiddush. But by the way, it's when I said about doing the Rav, I want to do what I did in the early 80s. I reconstructed some of his greatest shiurim. You understand? And this the world has to hear today. Because they forgot, they don't know, it's already a generation and a half after the Rav was active. So you can give the greatest shiur in the world that you have to sit for Kiddush. Halacha l'maisi, he asked the Rav, Rebbe, what should I do? Should I sit or stand? The Rav said, what did your father do? What does your father do? Your father sits? You sit. Your father stands, you stand. You understand? You have to understand the person is raised a certain way. Lundus lechud, lundus is one thing. Paskin l'shayla is another thing. But halacha l'maisa, you have to act the way tradition, the way you were raised. So anyway, this woman was raised in a world where a woman shaves her head and puts on a tichel, doesn't wear a sheitel or wears a sheitel on top of a shaven head. And here it is America, and she intermarries with a man who comes from a tradition, not Hungarian like this, where women wear shekels on top of their hair. And the poor husband is insisting that she not shave her hair. And the poor woman doesn't know what to do. She was raised a certain way, and she contacts Rav Moshe. And Rav Moshe paskins la halacha that first of all in America there's no minig hamakom, there's no minig of America. It's a challenge of ingathering of exiles, and that the woman has to do as her husband requests. And if he doesn't want you to shave your hair, he's makpid, then you follow him. And it's hard for the woman, and I can understand her. But then Rav Moshe is so magnificent, and don't think the husband is a manuvel. In other words, if we want our wives to look pretty, to look nice, to look attractive, and again, I could give so many shurim on this, there's so much in Chazal, but suffice it, look at the end of that shiva with Rav Moshe, where Rav Moshe says, Adarabba the Adarabba, the fact that he wants her to look pretty is a wonderful sign. And he quotes the Gemara in Tainit with Rabbi Zaira's family, how they were thankful that their wives looked beautiful and attractive so they wouldn't look at other women. And you see, this is a very healthy Torah attitude towards sex. Sex is here to stay, thank God. Without sex, none of us would be sitting here. Without sex, chickens didn't have eggs. You all know the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the same Gemara in Yoima. But you have to sanctify it. And Rav Moshe is magnificent here. And that's Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe lived in this world. If you knew Rav Moshe, this is why the Tendler family was so upset with the article biography of Rav Moshe, because they described Rav Moshe as an angel. Rav Moshe was lived in this world. Yes, he was an angel. Believe me, I know Rav Moshe's secrets. He used to get up at 4:30, start learning. No one could bother him. No one could ask him shilas. No one could call him to the telephone. And then he davened hours later and had breakfast. And it was a man of such responsibility. What you don't know is, and this I saw with my own eyes, he sat in the MTJ, Masif Tiferet Yerushalayim Beis Medrash. He had a phone attached to his shtender that lit up. The phone company did something special for him because he didn't want it to ring, he didn't want to disturb anyone. On the other hand, he knew that many of the phone calls are jerks like Rakefed, Rofkov, Adam the rabbinate, suffering, who have an urgent shaila that they only want to ask Rav Moshe. So he, you know, is shyly have to answer. It's, if you have the ability to answer, you have an achrayat. It's a gemara in sight, the Tafkaf Bet. So he had a phone with the light. Now, I want to go further, and I want to show you now where Rav Moshe reverses himself. And it's just unbelievable what Rav Moshe does here. Igrot Moshe, Evin Ezra, Chelik Bet. It's the second time Rav Moshe deals with Evin Ezra. Siman Yud Bet. I repeat, Igrot Moshe, Evin Ezra, Chelik Bet, be in a Siman Yud Bet. By the way, it's very, very hard with Rav Moshe, with Rav Ovadia, since they publish so many editions. Rav Moshe, he does Evin Ezra again, he does it a third time, and a fourth time, and a fifth time, and Orach Chaim, and Choshen Mishpat Les, and Yoredeya, and you don't know when they say volume 1, volume 2, volume 3, it doesn't mean anything. You have to know Evin Ezra, which time did he get to it, because you can have a volume with Orach Chaim 3, Evin Ezra 2, Yoredeya 4, all in one volume. But I'm giving you Igrot Moshe, Evin Ezra, Chelik Bet. Okay, what's the shayla? It's from 1962, and it's to an individual, Yedidi HaNichbad. Now, what I gather, David Lapa, I don't know who it is, what I gather from the shayla is that Rav Moshe knew the family. He was a Rev, and Rav Moshe knew the Rebbetzin. And the Rebbetzin told Rav Moshe, she's having problems with her husband. What is the problem? Oh, it's a problem that surfaced in Israel very strongly in the late 90s. She wants to wear a shaitel, and he wants her just to wear a tichel, not a shaitel. And here, thank you. Here you get involved with the whole question of a shaitel. In other words, and there's a world of literature on this. It goes all the way back to the Rishonim, and it follows into the Shulchan Aruch, and you'll see Achronim, right down to our days. Well, I mean, what's wrong? The Gemara talks about in Shabbos, a woman wearing a peah. And so you see, women did wear shaitels, what we call a shaitel, what in modern Hebrew you call a peah. Peah Nachrit, the Gemara uses the expression, if I'm not mistaken. What's the problem? Problem is very simple. The whole reason a married woman covers her hair is out of modesty. You come along with a sheitel, with all due respect. At times, a woman looks much better in a sheitel than in her own hair. And we've all seen that. I can tell you, a student of mine, obviously I don't want to mention her name, but I once met her at some festive gathering. I forget already what it was. She was wearing a blonde sheitel. I want to tell you, oh my, it did not befit her dignity and her tzniut. Evidently, I'm not the only one who felt that way, because I never saw her in that sheitel again. So, Baruch Hashem, someone must have said something. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to use a street expression, but that sheitel, if you know the expression in Yiddish, it's gepasst va Paris. In Paris, you wear a sheitel like that, not in Yerushalayim HaKodesh. So, many of the Achronim were opposed to a sheitel. It goes back to the Shutei Kippur. I mean, Reb Meisher brings sources, and when the battle was fought here, Rav Avadjer asked us a sheitel. Everyone, right down the line, I told you, in the Litvish Welt, they tried to ask a sheitel, but the fact that Rav Shach refused to sign, it would be like Rav Yashiv refusing to sign today. So the fact that Rav Shach refused to sign knocked the wind out of the sails in the literature world. So the husband is makpid. He doesn't want a sheitel. He wants to be from. Evidently, and I'm reading into the tshuva, but you don't have to be a genius to read into it. It's quite obvious. Rav Moshe knows the husband. And the husband is clean shaven. Now, I want to ask you a question. How are you allowed to shave? How are you allowed to shave? Well, I go back to Lakewood Yeshiva. We started with Lakewood. Let me continue with Lakewood. I don't think I wrote this story in Washington. I should have, but my wife is mad already. They cut down on the chapters on Russia, and certain things she did heroically got left out. Certain things that I wrote got left out. It's no good when they cut out, but you know, you can't, the book is heavy enough, so there are limits. Anyway, Hanukkah time, it's Lakewood, and I'm going up to sleep. It was a little Lakewood in the Beis Medrash, and there were dormitories right above the Beis Medrash, and there was a place where we ate, a kitchen. There were dormitories right above where we ate, and I'm going up to sleep, and I see two students standing like one flight up. It was a, what do you call it? It's a house where you have flights. It's not a ranch. What do they call an old-fashioned house where you have a first floor and a second floor? What do you call it?
Duplex.
Duplex. All right. I don't know. Duplex. Say them. Kibalti. So they're standing on the stairway looking down. So I say to them, what are you guys looking for? They say, we don't earn, if Rabaran Kutlow starts walking up the steps to go to sleep, we have to warn people. No, I have to warn people. What are they doing? This is a small Lakewood. It's not Lakewood today. When you have thousands of students, Mela, you can have among them sinners. But what could they be doing? So they told me, these are guys, they're shaving. They're shaving. And Rabaran Asid shaving with a shaver. And they were Samach on Reb Moshe. And in Lakewood, the more right-wing guys, the bigger Kanoim, as we used to call them, used to, you have to know Yiddish to appreciate this, used to say on Reb Moshe, Ematitzich, Humatia. Matitzich in Yiddish means he tires himself out. It's a double intender. Trying to find heterim and matitzich. All right, so it's a machloikis. What's the machloikis? All right, here an electric shaver is a machloikis. I don't want to go into detail, but essentially, Ritani, the Gemara says scissors you're allowed to use. What are scissors? It's two edges are working. One will not work without the other. One cuts and one holds the hair in place. An electric shaver is an electrified scissor. You have a razor and you have a guard. It's like a scissor. So those who are matir are matir. Those who are not matir say, no, that cuts too close and it's not a scissor. Deyasa. No, but those who are matir, what are you worried about? You're worried about your wife's wearing a sheitel Because if she wears a sheitel, people might think it's not a sheitel, but it's her real hair. You shave. Why don't people think that you shave with a razor? You use a shaver, you use a Remington, you use a Schick. That's what we had then. That you're not worried about. And Rav Moshe tells this guy off very nicely. And he explains that, Rav Moshe's insight to life, he says, everyone knows that it's a sheitel. I, he says, when you look at it, you might not realize it's a sheitel, but Rav Moshe says, men don't realize it. Avol nashim vaday mika. Women will recognize right away that it is a sheitel. And then he says, it's just amazing. What if she works among men? So, and now, first of all, what do you see from this? That Rav Moshe says, shelo nachtar bein anashim. See, it was a different world then. Men and women intermingled. Rav Moshe's famous trivia about riding in a subway, that Rav Moshe's mate, and in the New York subways during rush hour, you get fairly crushed at times. Rav Moshe's mate, this all came to the fore now with Hillary Clinton and who else? They told me the former ambassador to Indic, Martin Indic, from Australia to America. Martin Indic, Zolazayna Shemesh Abizid, I would have Nachat. So he also, they're criticizing Israel because of a few buses where separate. And what about Williamsburg? What about the buses to Muncie? What about the buses to Borough Park? American democracy is falling in, caving in. It's mind-boggling what's going on. And all the digs they give Hillary Clinton, if your husband rode on buses where the men and women sat separately, Monica Lewinsky wouldn't be a byword across the world today. But you see from Rav Moshe, women worked with men. By the way, I can tell you when I was in a Bell's establishment and I saw something that while you emulated here, when we rebuilt the doors on the top floor, you'll notice that all the doors have tremendous glass on them. So there's never a problem of yichud. So I was very impressed with Bell's. They have men and women working there, but there's never a problem with yichud because there is, you can look right in. Yichud is not shayach under those conditions. So Rav Moshe writes that even if the men don't know that it's a shaitel, but any woman will be able to tell. Al kivin dal kol kamanim nika lenashim ein la asar. There's no reason to asa. And then Rav Moshe deals with the problem that everyone's talking about now with YU, that it's true, we're living in a world where the husband is worried that if you're going to wear a sheitel and look nice, people will think you're part of the majority, and the majority of people already in America in the 1960s, they used the word here, it's not a nice word, prutzot, that it's not a nice word, because in modern Hebrew, prutzot mamish means prostitutes. Reb Meish is using it in the sense of, people who are kaldat, who are not medakteik in religion, in halacha, but it's not a nice word, prutzot. But Rav Moshe writes, you're worried, they'll think your wife is one of the prutzot, but he says, this is not so, because everyone knows that she's religious, and once she's religious, she's covering her hair, and no one is going to suspect that she's part of the crowd that throws away Yiddishkeit. And there's no Marisayan here. The husband evidently felt it's Marisayan, where he's coming from, a sheitel. And then he goes after the husband. And he says, what about people who shave? He says, what about people who shave? Why aren't you chayshish for Marisayan? Because everyone knows he's a frum Jew. No one is going to suspect that the Baron Lichtenstein shaves with a razor. You understand? No one's going to suspect that. People know you're a frum Jew. People know. I don't have to tell you. In Israel, the religious parties got the government to drop the taxes on the imported shavers. All the shavers are imported. And if you'll notice the prices in the last 2 years, I think it is already, they are much closer to what you can get a good shaver for in America. And they you know, Shas, the power, they got the government to drop the import taxes. So Rav Moshe says, if you're not worried about shaving and there's no Marit Ayin there, there is also no Marit Ayin when it comes to her wearing a shaitel. And Rav Moshe at the end, he hits the guy over the head. Look how delicately. V'yim kvod tarato hu mehanohagim lehit kaleach. And he says, if you're one of those, he evidently knows it. He says, you shave, he says. And you're not worried, and you agree with my reasons why there's no Marit Ayin, then you shouldn't be machmir on your wife with the shekel. And then Reb Moshe adds another concept, which to me is contradictory to everything we've said until now. What have we said until now? That the woman has to follow the husband, there has to be one halakha in the house, there has to be shalom bayit, makom shenagu, everything we've said over the last half year. Reb Moshe says, when it comes to a shaitel, it's her halakha, not your halakha. You can't interfere with her. Now, I thought about this. I'll give you an answer in a moment. But what do we mean you can't interfere? The whole concept of living in one house under one roof with one pot and one set of dishes, or two sets of dishes, but one basic halacha. What does Rav Moshe mean you can't interfere? Contradictory. The last shiva, you do interfere. Everything with Pesach, you do interfere. Everything with Lakosha, you do interfere. But I'll tell you, that's what Rav Moshe says. But I just heard the Rav Asher Weiss today via a CD. So he finds a contradiction in the Mishnah Brura, and he tries to find for it, to come up with something. So I want to explain Rav Moshe. I think I'm on solid ground here. You see, when it comes to Hilchot Nida, the whole Ne'emanut is the woman. V'safra la, it's a Gemara Nida. She is believed. You don't stand over her, checking the Eid HaBedika, checking the calendar. She is believed. When the issue came up of the Yoatzat Halakha, so a lot of people jumped on me, what's your opinion? I said, what's the Shaila? I said, if a woman knows how to learn, you know, we have women got Kabbalah on Shrita, on Bedika. We have actual documents from Italy where women were Sheikhtat of Ofat, of Dakot. Or at least Ofat, I shouldn't say beyond that. But, you know, Reb Moshe's famous tshuva, Carmel Kosher, does it still exist? Anyone here from Chicago? So that was a tremendous manufacturing kosher plant in Chicago. The Rav HaMakshir was Rav Zemba. It was a nephew to Rav Menachem Zemba, who survived the Holocaust. And like many other Holocaust survivors, he died young. The Amana was left without Panasa. So she wanted to take over the Hashkacha. The owners were more than happy to have the Rebbetzin in. They say she was a better mashgiach than her husband, a woman, you understand, your whole kitchen. How do we eat in our kitchens? It's our wives who run the kitchens, at least until modern times. I don't know, today it's a different world already. I see that with my grandchildren. Everyone is in the kitchen, everyone is cooking, everyone is a chef. It's a different world today. I'm a chef, but I'm a chef from the freezer to the microwave. That's not the high time, big time. So Reb Moshe wrote a tshuva, and you tell me, was Matir 100%? If she knows what she's doing, a woman is even better than a man. And I can tell you in South Africa, in Cape Town, this woman is at my lectures, her hair covered, wonderful woman, intelligent, good questions. I walk into the supermarket, they give me a tour of the supermarket. And it's a sight to see. The bakery is entirely kosher. Here it says milky. Here it says parva. Every South African knows what the word parva means. But the meat, you have two separate areas. Kosher, under the base din of South Africa, and non-kosher. Who's the mashpicha? I meet the lady there, dressed in white. She's running the whole meat area. So Reb Moshe, you see, when it comes to paskining a shaila in Hilchat Nida, why don't you believe a woman if she knows how to learn? It's her area. She's responsible. She can answer. No, that's what I think Reb Moshe is saying. That a shaitel is part of Snid, a shaitel is part of the sexual relationship between a husband and wife. That area is the woman's domain. It has nothing to do with you. But out. It's like she can't tell you which tefillin to put on. You want to put on Rabbeinu Tam, Gesundheit. You want to put on Rabbeinu Eliyahu, a third pair of tefillin, a fourth pair of tefillin. You know what the Vilna Gaon said. If I'm going to be makpan on Rabbeinu Tam, I think he listed out, you can correct me, but it was over 20 different variations of tefillin you would have to put on. But that's his area. And that's the way I would learn Pshat and Reb Moshe. I hope I'm correct. But it's a very fascinating shiva. Gentlemen, we have arrived. And here it's something entirely different. An entirely different level. And I was yet privileged to know the man, to know the family. I taught his daughter. And I'm talking about Reb Chaim David Halevi, the late, it's a loss that we've never replaced, the late Svadik Chief Rabbi of Tel Aviv. His daughter Nitzchi was my student in Michlala. I believe she lives today in Mitzpe Yericho. I don't know what her married name is, but I know Talmidim have sent me regards from her. So Reb David Halevi was very different. If you're familiar with Sfarim, many Sfarim, he was a first-rate Talmud Chacham, but he was a totally modern individual. In other words, when you speak about Yeshiva University, so, you know, you talk about the Rav. What makes the Rav different than Reb Aaron Kotler, than Reb Moshe Feinstein? The Rav, he was Reb Moshe, he was Reb Aaron, he was part of their world, but he had a total Western humanistic outlook. You could see the impact of Berlin, of general education, of the Hegelian dialectics. He functioned a little bit differently because of what he had been exposed to in life. Reb David Halevi, I'll use the Yiddish word to describe him, the Menschlichkeit in his tshuvat, in his feeling, is second to none. And I'm quoting now from Aseilich HaRav, Chelik Shishi, Tshuva Lamed Zayin. And it was published in 1985. So we're dealing with the 25, 30 years ago. And the question is unbelievable. It's part of modern day Israel. I don't believe you ever had questions like this before modern day Israel. Here's the case he describes. Bachura Teimanit, or he uses the word Teimaniya. What would you say in modern Hebrew? Anyone here speak it native language? Is it a Teimanit or Teimaniya? Which one? Teimaniya, yeah, because what would you say, a Charediya or Charedit? You say Charedit, you don't say Charediya. That's what bothers me. My wife said Charediya the other day and I corrected her. I don't know. Okay, could be. You say Teimaniya. Okay, a Teimaniya, religious Teimaniya, is getting ready to marry an Ashkenazi Chiloni boy. So right away you have to ask, religious girl, irreligious boy. I want to tell you, I've seen this many times in Israel. Generally it always is the woman who's religious, the man is not. He promises, this is what he writes, he promises, And he agrees that she can educate the children where she wishes, and he promises in the course of time he'll change his lifestyle. Okay, and this is the description. I've seen it many, many times. I have to tell you, generally it works out. There are times when it doesn't, obviously, but generally it works out. I've seen mothers who are religious. I know one case very well. It's a very close friend of my wife, and her daughter married a Chiloni, and the kids are all 100%. The mother set the tone. It doesn't interfere, but, you know, it's not his cup of tea. He's, let's use the word, a-religious. You meet people like that. They, you know, you want to be religious, very nice, fine, good. I'm very happy to be what I am, to get a PhD in some topic, to read Haaretz, and to watch television occasionally, and read a good book. These are intelligent people, but religion doesn't speak to him. All right, can Rakefet help? I don't know. I always feel like if I could, you know, if they studied with me for a while, maybe I could open their hearts, their eyes, but I don't want to overstate the case. But sometimes it works out. Most of the time in Israel, it does work out if it's the girl, the woman who's religious, the man is not. Now, she turns to Rav David HaLevi, v'nafsha b'sheilata, im tinhag k'minhag beit aviha, o k'minhagei ashkenazim adat ba'ala, af shehu chiloni. Do you see the depth of this question? She's a religious taimaniya. Have you ever met the taimanim? They're very good people. They're deeply religious. It hurts when you see what Ben-Gurion and his people did to some of the taimanim, and sometimes they didn't come back. Some of them, many came back. But sometimes you see three generations later when they had the nude, the idol worship in Yam HaMelech that Saturday morning when thousands of people. I mean, you got to be sick. You got to be real sick. This is New York Times. This is the world of freedom of speech. You got to be real sicky. And 5,000 people early Shabbos morning posed nude. That was the same week that they announced in Yam HaMelech they're now going to be separate beaches for men and for women. So Saturday night, I heard on the radio, they interviewed two of the people who posed nude, Taimanim. And they asked them, a girl and a man, and they asked them, what's going to happen when you come back home and the Taimanim are conservative, you know, with a small C. They said, all right, they'll tell us off and dismiss us as being part of the secular modern, look, underline the word modern, Israel crowd. Rakefet would put it, being part of the secular crowd of idol worship. God have mercy on us. But anyway, be it as it may, could you imagine this becomes a yichus and they publish books and it's like animals. Believe me, when you look at the pictures, it's not pornography. It's pashut looking like pictures of going to a zoo, in my opinion. Okay, but what are you paskin? What do you do? Does she keep the minchagim? But she's marrying an Ashkenazi. But she's marrying an Ashkenazi who couldn't care less. Now, Rav David HaLevi raises an issue that no one has touched upon. What do you mean, one minhag? Do you have to force someone to change? What if a husband says, and maybe it's halacha l'maisa, I don't know. He's Ashkenazi and she's a Mizrachit, they would say today. And he says, you know, you keep your minhagim, it doesn't bother me. You're comfortable, you grew up that way. You daven a certain way. You don't have to daven, you know, the svadiyot daven half of what the Ashkenaziyot daven, because they paskin, like the Rambam, like Chachmei Svad, that they can't make a bracha on a mitzvah tasei, which has man grama, right or wrong. So when you look at the davening, it leaves out a good part of the davening. Look at a svadik. Look at a svadik sitter for women. Now the man says, it doesn't bother me. I'll daven Ashkenazi. You daven the way you were raised. Comes Pesach, cook, eat whatever you want. I won't eat rice, I won't eat legumes, I was raised, you know, an Ashkenazi, but you can cook whatever you want. I can eat out of the same pots and pans. I just eat the food that I'm able to eat. And it doesn't bother me. And what would you say in a case like that? And you see, Rav David HaLevi writes a very strong tshuva. See, this was his respect of women, his respect of the other. Isn't that the word they use? What's the word they use? The other? Is that the word I'm looking for? You know, when someone is different, that you have to respect the person beyond you. His respect was so strong. And he says in all these tshuvot, Makom shenagu shalom bayit, avo me'olam lo danu im chayevet ha'isha le'echol orez b'Pesach. No one said she has to. Umaych pat lebalam hi tochal or lo tochal. What does it bother the husband? What does he care? She cooks, I'm quoting him. She'll cook whatever he wants. But why does it bother him? And why do you force her to leave her father's minhag? Why do you force her to leave the world in which she grew up? And he reaches the conclusion that in one house, if it doesn't create tension, you can each keep your own minhag. There is no need to merge into one. Kolzman she'ein shum hafra'a b'nichu takin shel habayit. It's revolutionary. And he says, no, the children should follow the father. But as long as she cooks for the husband, makes him his beans, makes him his rice, does what he wants, there's no need, if he's that type of person, that he's not going to force her, he shouldn't force her. Let her continue in her father's footsteps. And here, on page 123, here you have already a fascinating document on the whole question of legumes. And you all know we have an attitude today, and I also have this attitude partially. What are we so machmir for? What's the problem with legumes? What is a legume? I mean, you know, we've spoken about this. There's a word that no one can define it. Chazal, the minute begins long after Chazal. There's no definition. And why is there a minhag? So he tells, I'll tell you what he quotes here from the Ben Ish Chai, quoting Rabbi Yosef Chaim Baghdadi. If you know Sfadic sources, you're in the heavyweight world. This is like quoting the Nolde B'Yehuda, the Chatam Sofer. There's a street named in Machne Yehuda, Rabbi Yosef Chaim, named after the Ben Ish Chai. I once took a picture with my grandson, who's named Yosef Chaim, standing in front of the sign. And he says, look, if a girl has a background that she never ate legumes, and her husband does, you should know that not eating legumes can mean a great deal to her. And it's not something to be dismissed lightly. And he tells the following story from the Ben Ish Chai, that the Ben Ish Chai writes about his grandfather, that the heads, the lay leaders of the Jewish community made a Sudah at the seventh day of Pesach. The Nasi, put into your language, the president of the synagogue. President of the synagogue. The last day of Pesach, the board of directors of the shul made a tremendous dinner for everybody and invited all the rabbis, the senior rabbi, the junior rabbi, the associate rabbi, the rabbi who heads up adult education, the rabbi who heads up the children's education, the youth director, I have all the titles correctly. Yeah, Lee, you think I'm joking? Daniel, have you been in Beth Jacob in Beverly Hills? Okay, so you understand what I'm saying already. There's so many rabbis running around there. When you say rabbi, six people jump up to the official title. So they all came, and he describes the table. This is the president. The right or wrong, I'm talking about Beverly Hills. I just mentioned Beverly Hills, North Beverly Hills, Rodeo Drive. And all types of bowls of delicious food. And in the bowl of rice, on top of the rice, there is a wheat grain. And all the food had to be thrown out because they used the same utensils to mix it. And everything was hot. And on Pesach, there's no beetle, it's b'mashehu. So, and he describes the story, and he says, after that, my grandfather never ate rice again on Pesach. That's why I told you, if you're a Mizrahi, you're a Svadi, and you eat rice, you have to check it before Pesach, and it's best to cook it and freeze it. Now, when you need it in Pesach, you put it into the microwave. Why? Because if grains blew in, and that seems to be the real reason why the minig developed not to eat. As I told you from my experience in the army and cleaning the rice before Pesach, remember the white tablecloth and pushing it, and anything that's not white you would pull out. If you cook it before Pesach, there's beetle b'shishin. On Pesach, it's b'mashehu. So he says that if a girl has this minhag and she feels that to eat rice, it's like, to give you again the same analogy I've made so many times, my wife would ever catch me breaking matzah into soup on Pesach, I am in trouble. Capital T. I was at a seder at my in-laws, Zichronim Tzadikim Levracha, people who, born and bred in America and remained from 110 years ago. It's not a simple matter. And I once broke a drop of matzah into the soup. My mother-in-law thought I was eating chametz on Pesach. Go and explain to a sion of a Hasidic family that the Vilna Gaon a knedlach at the Seder on purpose, lahotzi milibam shel chasidim. So, you understand what he's saying? This is fabulous. He is so, what would be the word? He's so sensitive for the other, for the wife, for the mate, for the spouse. He says, only if the husband insists. And there are men, there are guys that are bullies, I would call them. Well, if he's a bully and he insists and he he's the king, it has to all be his way, then shalom bayit, you're stuck. And the wife has to go along with the man. But if he doesn't bully her and he's gracious and broad-minded, nothing wrong. He'll eat rice and she won't. Respect her. She grew up this way. Okay, and I'll show you in a minute. He goes into two other areas. Very fascinating. Yes, Mindy.
Couldn't you make a strong counter-argument that really the children should follow the mother's practice? Because if she's religious and he's not...
No. One second. We didn't get there. You're jumping ahead of me. He's talking in general that when it comes to religion, you follow the... He's talking Father Tzadikim, Gedolei Yisrael. He's talking about the Ben Ish Chai, etc. Okay, he raises two other issues here, where he says, how can you force a woman, and here he raises, first of all, the issue of glatt kosher, and the Beis Yosef. And he says, don't think that eating glatt is a small matter. For the Sfadim, this is absolutely required. This is the Beis Yosef, this is the way they practice. It's not stam a chumra biyama. It's not like you don't want to use OUD. You don't want to use... By the way, you should know that one time ShopRite had a big contract with Israel, with the super souls here, and they shipped over a fortune of food under the ShopRite label. And in Hanov, there was a super soul right under my daughter's window. It's a yesh today. It's gone through many different titles, names, but it's a Haredi yesh today. So I take a look. A week goes by, 2 weeks go by, and a ShopRite ice cream, I'm buying it cheaper in Hanov than I would pay in the United States. I couldn't believe it. ShopRite. And then I realized why. The people who placed the order didn't realize it's OUD, but it's not Chalav Yisrael. Going to sell OUD, not Chalav in Yisrael, in Hanov, it's like standing on a street corner today and trying to sell umbrellas. Got it? Boy, did I benefit from that OUD. But he says, it's not like a, this is glad, this is, a sikha to them is forbidden. So he says, how can you force her? Then he raises another issue, which in my own family I have this issue. One of my daughters, no? How long, you're learning chulin, how long do you wait between meat and milk? How long? I was raised 6 hours. Then I grew older and I met the Altamira and the Shanghai crowd and the Rambam Slushin Shashi Shit, 5 hours and something. Right or wrong? You see, Shalashuddis, when it's a Friday and you have a problem, every Litvisha Talmud Chacham will tell you, oh, Ishen Fimsha Mitafetel Keminesen. It's a 5 hours and a quarter already. It's Shasat Chag. It's Shabbos. Let's enjoy the cheese. No. Then I grew older and I saw Meikar HaDin. How long do you have to wait between meat and milk? 1 hour. And even that is, you know, really all you have to do is clean out your teeth. All right, we wait an hour. No. What do you do? One of my daughters married a Yeki who waits 3 hours. There's no explanation for 3 hours. It's neither fish nor fowl. Nishtahin or nishtaher. But all right, people wait 3 hours for Kazim Ahmed Davar, the Gemara in Bracha, Tafmim. Hey, all right, gotta listen, gotta follow. So you see, I could never wait 1 hour. I could never be satisfied with 3 hours. Because I grew up 6 hours. And say, all right, as a teenager, I learned that the average you can get away with 5 hours and a quarter. But he brings this down. He says, if a woman grew up that 6 hours, why do you have to force her? You keep 1 hour. But allow her to do the way she grew up. And you find here that there is such insight, such sensitivity, it's overwhelming. And if you knew the man and you know his writings, you can understand this is part of him. And he says, and the Chubby says, and don't think I take a minhag lightly, he says. It's not that. Minhagim are very important. And you have to treat them with importance. And he says, the only time I paskin to get rid of a minhag, you'll see in the tshuva, I'll give you the source, and this is very interesting. Yaakov, have you ever been in a shul in Simchas Torah?
Yes.
Dallas?
Yes.
Right or wrong? Is it a madhouse or not? Shuls on Simchas Torah? Everyone gets an aliyah. You know what goes on? In my first year, in my second rabbinate, the rabbinate where, thank God, I succeeded, Maplewood, South Orange, built the first Orthodox shul in suburban Essex County, the first shul with Mechitza. No one believes me today. But you can read it. It's in Washington. The Rebbe wouldn't write lies. No, the area is filled with Torah. My community today has an air of go and dream. If anyone would have told me in 62, 50 years from now, there'll be an airfare. We didn't even have a minuit bed. It was a new shul, a first draft. The first Simchas Torah, the Balabatim were mad at me that we davened Musaf. They told me in Newark, everyone was so drunk, no one davened Musaf on Simchas Torah. I looked at them, Simchas Torah, you don't daven Musaf, you don't daven Sheni. They were mad at me. Yeah, what goes on? You know what I did this year? My children, we made a private minyan. Baruch Hashem, you know, in that shul. You were there when I gave Kiddush. I was Hasan Torah at the first minyan. We made a private minyan. Why? We'd split into two. We had 25 people. Baruch Hashem, we were finished davening by 8:15. I like to get finished by 8 o'clock. I'm a learner. I'm not a davener. My sins I admit. I'm not a chassid. I'm a learner, I'm a litvak. What can I do? I can't get it out of my blood. Baruch Hashem, I'm happy to be a litvak. All right, mendaf davenin, mendaf davenin, but mitamos. You guys don't know what I'm saying. Fine, I can talk Yiddish and sell them the Brooklyn Bridge, but what can I tell you? I grew up, Yiddish is my native Torah language. Michael has trouble understanding that, but I had to break my teeth because it was sink or swim. You follow me? The mirror spoke Yiddish. I'm talking baseball to them. They looked at me like I'm a Chinaman. You understand? Not simple. But, gentlemen, just think, he says, the only minhag I ever was mevatel, calling everyone to the Torah on Simchas Torah. See, that minhag has no makar whatsoever. It's something the Jews developed against every kind of halachic sense. Halachically, you have 5 aliyot in Yom Tov, 6 aliyot in Yom Kippur, 7 aliyot on Shabbat. What do you mean you have a 500 aliyot on Simchas Torah just because there are 500 people in the shul? So he says, that's the only minute God have covered Beit HaKnesset, because you know what happens? They make Kiddush, they have a Kiddush, you get an aliyah, you get drunk afterwards, you come back in, the kids are tying talesim. All right, in Israel it's a little bit more serious because Simchas Torah and Shmini Atzeres fall together. But in Chutz La'aretz, you know the famous story with the Rav in Boston, you know the story with Maimonides? That the Chazan got up and started singing a tune of Yom Kippur, and the Rav gave him a look as if he could kill him. Quickly he switched to a Yontif Nigin. But Rav David HaLevi says that's the only minig I ever played with. But to me, minig is very important, and you shouldn't force your mate, you shouldn't insist that she give up the way she was raised. Now, here, this is what Mendel is referring to, and here I want to comment, and l'halacha l'maisa, and I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but it's my opinion. Here already we have a different circumstance. The man, he's not going to make Kiddush Friday night. The woman has to make Kiddush. She's running the house. Maybe he will make Kiddush, but it'll be, you know, every Jew here knows how to make Kiddush. If you've been in the army requires you to, everyone covers their head Friday night, they pop up there from their army jacket, the pom-pom, I think they call it, and cover their head, and you hear Kiddush. Everyone knows how to make Kiddush. But she sets the tone, so there's no question. Kol's money is not a Shomer Torah mitzvah. You follow the woman. Later, when the man becomes religious, then the children should follow the father. That's what he says. I have to tell you, I'm not certain I agree with this. And I'll tell you cases. Halacha l'maisa. In Cape Town, South Africa. Not Cape Town. Johannesburg, South Africa. There's a very vibrant Torah community. And you have everyone there. You have Chabad, you have Or Sameach, you have Mizrahi. Mizrahi actually built the community. The Rav of Mizrahi is, his last name is Peretz, Rabbi Doron Peretz. He's a studied in the Gush, fine Yerei Shemayim, fine Talmud Chacham. His origins are Moroccan. He is totally Ashkenazi. davens Ashkenazi, lives Ashkenazi. So I asked him, what's the story? And he told me that he's a Baal Tshuva, and the people who made him frum, he became like them. And I have to tell you, I go along with it. I go back to a source I quoted to you this year, last year, the Zohar, the Ari HaKodesh, the Yud Bet Sha'arim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yud Bet Shvatim. And then there's the Shah HaKlali. All paths lead to sanctity and to God. And if the wife makes the husband frum, well, I don't see a big objection. If the husband feels he owes his religion to her and he wants to follow her minhagim, I can't object. Allah had come of a kamer if you're made frum. And here I'll tell you a fascinating story. Bedidi HaViyuvda. Fascinating story. One of the famous refuseniks who came out of Russia. So his daughter gets engaged, marries, happily married, thank God, to a Gera Chassid. So right away you have to wonder, a girl who's the daughter of a refusenik means she's a Balat Tshuva, second generation Balat Tshuva. Gera Chassidim don't exactly marry Balat Tshuva. So here's the story. And I met them at the engagement party, I spoke, and I was overwhelmed. I meet the father of the Chatan. Father of the Chatan, pure Svadi, both sides, Egyptian. 56, had to get out. They were killing Jews on the street after Israel's lightning victory. Goes to England, a teenager. No, a Jewish kid arrives in England, parentless, penniless. Stamford Hill, they took him in. Family took care of him. Family of Gerach Siddim. He became a Gerach Hassim, like the people who adopted him. Belevu Nefesh. Ereta Geshmaki Yiddish. He speaks the king's English, or the queen's English, and his native language is Arabic, Egyptian Arabic. All right, what am I going to tell him? Go back to your roots? He's frumkeit. Everything he owes is life. So I'm not certain your humble servant agrees with the final psak, but it's food for thought. And this comes up in Israel, where religion and edot and differences, we intermingle, we intermarry. We're still not one people, halacha lemaisa, but we are one people when it comes to alev v'nefesh. And I have to say, if you were made frum by Rabbi Avadya Yosef, I have no problem with an Ashkenazi becoming a total Svardi, kissing the hands of the rabbis. And if you were made frum by Ashkenazim, I have no problem the opposite way. I can tell you, Rav Shach was very makpid to his, I have to say, to his credit, he was the first one to open Torah to the Sephardic world, to the Litvisha Torah. He opened Panovich. He started saying Shir in Hebrew. It's very hard for him because his native language, the language he thinks in, the language he lives, is Yiddish. And you have to understand that. But all these Sfadim who were his Talmidim, like Rabbi Peretz, or the rabbi up the block here from Kol Yaakov, Rabbi, what's the last name? It slips my mind. I don't want to waste time. What's his name? I can't hear.
Ades.
Rabbi Ades, right. What's his son is Rabbi Yaakov Ades, and his name is Rabbi Yehuda Ades, right. And the great-grandfather was Rabbi Yaakov Ades, something very, very special. They speak perfect Yiddish. Perfect Yiddish. But their life, halachically, is totally Sephardi. Rav Shach was makpid that they continue their traditions. Okay, food for thought. Finally, Achron Achron Chaviv. And Yaakov will certainly find this very fascinating. You'll see why in a minute. And we now end off many months of lectures on a very fascinating topic, inter-ethnic marriages. By the way, Rav David Halevi says you don't find any trace of this in the Gemara. And he says even among the Rishonim it's rare. But he says in Israel, where we're all thrown together, the sha'elah of inter-ethnic marriages was thrown at him on a daily basis, which is, thank God, a reality of Kibbutz Galyat. Gentlemen, I want to quote to you from a sefer written by the Rosh Kollel of a very successful kollel in a city known as Dallas, Texas. The author, HaRav Yerachmiel David Fried. The name of the sefer, Yontif Sheni Kehilchato. All right, I think you're familiar. It's a fascinating sefer. Now, I have to tell you here, there's a tremendous machloket. I'll just say it very briefly. The sefer already came out in two editions that I know of. There may have already been a third. It's a tremendous machloket regarding Yontif Sheni. Does it follow your mindset or where your feet are? If it's like Megillat Esther, then if you're in Israel, it's one day. If you're in Chutz Laaretz, it's 2 days. If it follows your mindset, it means what community do you belong to? And if you're visiting from Dallas, then you have to observe like you're in Dallas. If you're visiting America from Jerusalem, you observe like you're in Jerusalem. And this is a tremendous basic machloket. The problem is compounded by the fact that the Mechaber seems to, not seems, is posek. I don't want to go into limbs. I said shirma this for a year and a half, so I want to say something on a popular level now. I don't want to bore you with a year and a half worth of shirim. But the Mechaber paskins, it's where your feet are. I have to tell you that, the Mechaber paskins, it's where your mindset is, nothing to do with your feet. And therefore, if you're a Chutz Laaretz person in Israel, it's 2 days. If you're an Israeli in America, it's 1 day. On this particular psak of the Shulchan Aruch, and we'll deal with this later on in this class, there is a rebellion against the Shulchan Aruch, a rebellion that picked up a lot of steam and a lot of heat. It begins with the Chacham Tzvi. It follows over to the Alter Rebbe, the Rav Shulchan Aruch. It follows over to the Munkat Shurav in the Minchat Lazar. It follows over to Rav Kook, to the Chazon Ish, to Rav Avadya Yosef, to Rav Shmuel Solan, to Rav Chaim Michal Tkachinsky. It follows over to Rav Chaim Briska, Mori Rebbe, Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. It's quite an array of opposition. However, in modern times, it's gotten caught up in religious politics, and I see a trend before my eyes that has nothing to do with halacha. If you pardon me for using popular language, if you wear a black hat, you observe 2 days in Israel. If you wear a kippah struga, you observe 1 day in Israel. All right, it got caught up in politics. I wish it would be caught up in lamdas, but it got caught up in politics. The Sefer, Yontif Sheni Kehilchato, was written by Rav Fried, who, I believe he studied here in Mir. May have studied elsewhere, but I know he studied in Mir. So obviously, he's in the more black world, or more Haredi world, to use descriptive terms. He takes the approach like the Shulchan Aruch. So I have to tell you, I totally differ, and I would never have the problems I'm going to show you in a minute. To me, depends where you are. When I was in America this past Shavuot, I observed 2 full days. When I was in America a number of years ago on Pesach, I observed 2 full days. When I was in South Africa or Australia, I observed 2 full days. What can I do? I spoke with the Rav. That's what Rebbe told me. That's what Reb Moshe told him in the name of Reb Chaim, etc., etc. So it doesn't matter who you are, where you belong, what your mindset is. All that matters, where are my feet? It's like Kriyat HaMekillah. I went into the army, if you read Washington on Tainer Esther, The next day was Purim. My wife is in Yerushalayim. My children in Yerushalayim. My sperm are in Yerushalayim. Everything I own is in Yerushalayim. But I'm in Bethel. We observe Yud-Dalet, not Tetvav. Okay. Rabbi Fried, of course, has a different point of view. And he gets involved here. I'm quoting, beginning on page 86, Pevav, from the 1988 edition. I'm very careful to tell you the edition, because I know that the second edition was more expanded. I think I own my Xerox from the first edition. You can check it out. I corresponded. I wrote to him, actually. I say that I felt he didn't do enough justice to the other point of view, and corresponded with him. He, by the way, he's very successful in Dallas. It's a wonderful kollel, and they do wonderful work. I mean, it's an outreach kollel. It's not just a kollel. They're involved with the city. When you talk about black hats and Haredim, you shouldn't walk away with the wrong impression. It's a fabulous kollel in Dallas. And Dallas today is a near vein be Israel. It's not to be dismissed. There are two kollelim, and there are many day schools, and there's plenty of machlokes. Baruch Hashem. So beginning on page 86, he talks about the following. A shidduch was made between an Israeli and a girl from Chutz Laretz. And they're going to get married in Chutz Laretz. That's where the girl lives. All of you know, Minhag Yisrael is, you get married in the girl's community. All right? Right after the marriage, they're going back to Israel. Baruch Atah Adonai Melech Olam Shekel Melech. I imagine what it's talking about. They got married right before Shavuot. And right after Shavuot, they're going back to Israel. No, what do they do on Shavuot? You know what he paskins? They both observe a different religion. Husband, one day. He's from Eretz Yisrael. All that, the second day, you don't do malacha. You know, you don't want to cause machlokes. You don't want to embarrass anyone. So you don't do malacha. It's based upon the Gemara in Makom Shenahagu, Makom Pesachim. So you don't do malachim in front of Chutz Laretz people. But he observes one day. She observes two complete days. Yeah, they're going to live in Israel. But right now she's in Chutz Laretz. She hasn't moved yet. Do you understand what I'm saying here? Husband and wife. This is like a quiz, a surprise question. What do I have? The $64,000 question. When can a husband and wife, living in the same house, observe Yontif totally differently? One is listening to the radio, the television, daughter was room closed, in your language, playing with his computer, on the websites, reading about all the blogs dealing with the Yeshiva University, and the Stern College girl. I feel so bad for Richard Joel. You have no idea, because I know how this hurts. Take my word for it. I know how this hurts in fundraising. I know from within. I know what happened after the homosexual fiasco, and I know what happened after someone made certain comments that shouldn't have been made. And it hurts. I umzist. And you know, people blow it up. It's not that they'll say, you know, it was one girl. Oh, this is all of Stern College. Oh, what do you expect? It's all of Yeshiva College. And people blow it up. You don't realize we're never going to succeed with everyone. Ad Yimot HaMashiach. What can we do? Okay, anyway. Now, what about if a woman from Chutz Laretz comes to Eretz Yisrael? Or should I say, a man from Chutz Laretz comes to Eretz Yisrael to marry a woman. And he's going back to Dallas. He's from the Kollel. But they made a shidduch with a fine, wonderful Beis Yaakov girl from Yerushalayim. No, Shavuos comes. She observes one day. he observes 2 days. Got it? Then he quotes from Shlomo Zalman Orbach that Reb Shlomo Zalman says, it's not so simple. Maybe she has to follow her husband. He shot to Soveiv at Bala. Remember we quoted that many times. But he says, well, it's a Svara, but nevertheless, she's in Chutz Laaretz. She's not in Israel yet. 2 days. Even though her husband's only observing 1 day. And he says, the husband can put on tefillin in front of her. He's calling Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. The husband can put on tefillin in front of her, even though for her it's yontif. What's he putting on tefillin? But she understands that for him it's not yontif now. You understand? It's just fascinating. And what about if they're stuck in Israel over Pesach? There's another footnote here. And the man has come in from Chutz Laaretz. The girl has never left Israel. She's first going to go to Chutz Laaretz 2 weeks after Pesach. Shmini Shel Pesach. Now what goes on here? Shvi'i Shel Pesach is over at night. Everyone is running to the bakeries within 3-4 hours. All the chametz in the world is ready. They're baking. They have stuff in freezers. They're unloading freezers. Don't ask what goes on. People, I don't know. I could go my whole life without eating bread. I love matzah. I once put myself on the couch. Why do you love matzah? And I'll tell you why. It's Jewish bread. And I love anything Jewish. I love matzah. I have right now in my house, I have open 2 kilo of shmura matzah. 1 kilo still sealed and 1 kilo I'm working on. Baruch Hashem. They run, my children run. They go crazy. Chametz, chametz. She can eat chametz. And he's observing Yontif Sheni. Quotes of Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Wow. Watch. Lemmy Yendorf, he goes further. This is already, I tell you, it is so fascinating. This is page Pezayan. Ben Eretz Yisrael Habala Chutz Laaretz. An Israeli went to Dallas to marry a girl from Dallas. And they're going to come back to Eretz Yisrael right afterwards. But they agreed they're coming back for 3 years for him to learn. And then they go back to America so he should make a living. And he promised this to his father-in-law. Nope. What do they do? And he's in Chutz Laaretz, but he's going back to Eretz Yisrael. He says, no. You're in Chutz Laaretz? You're a Ben Chutz Laaretz. Whatever your plans are, plans do not enter into the picture. Right now, you're in Chutz Laaretz 2 days. You're going to Israel for 3 years? When you get there, you'll ask a Shaila. She's an American. 2 days. He's an Israeli. So, all his plans, and then he's going to settle 3 years later, all this does not enter into the equation. It's where you are at that moment, what community you belong to. He's an Israeli. She's an American. All the plans in the world do not affect the situation at that moment. And I can tell you, lahalacha, that in BMT, many times I had the shaila. You know, these kids, they get inspired. It's not like the kollel. I always say about the kollel, I once was sitting in Far Rockaway. It was it happened to me this past summer. It happened a few summers ago. So I had a student from 1962 sitting on one side of me, Rabbi Flaum, who had been rabbi of the White Shul. And on the other side of me was a student, Rabbi David Katz, who is a graduate of this kollel. So I said, gentlemen, I'll tell you the difference between you. When I taught Rabbi Flaum, I influenced him. When I taught Rabbi Katz, he influenced me. You understand? A kid, you get a kid, 14, 15, you change his life. You're teaching a man of 25. He's looking at the Rebbe. Rebbe, why don't you have a black hat? Why don't you wear a gatel? Why don't you have a beard? Why don't you have tcheyes, etc., etc.? So, you see, kids would say, Rebbe, we're going back to America, but we're coming back right after college. We're joining the IDF. What do we do for Yontif Sheni? What's your Shaila? We're Israelis. Gentlemen, NASA wrote a book. A funny thing happened to me on the way to Tel Aviv in 1967. You're Israelis. When you come back and you're here, give me a call. Until then, you're in Chutz Laretz. And that's essentially what he paskins. But of course, it has the spin that it's a totally different approach, that you can be in Chutz Laretz. I would never be able to answer like this, because I would say, if you're both in Chutz Laretz, it doesn't matter where you're from, what your plans are, it is Chutz Laretz. If you're in Eretz Yisrael, you are here. This is Eretz Yisrael. I don't have to tell you, these shaylos are endless. And what about if you're on a boat, and the boat docks in Israel on Yontif Sheni? You began the day on Yontif Sheni, and here you are landing. What about a plane? Why are we laughing about a boat? The boat was taka'as. Shailas with the mapilim, with the refugees coming in after World War II. You're on a plane. You take off. Shavuos ended. That night you're on a plane to New York. You arrive in New York, you take a cab to Manhattan. Everyone is going to shul. People are rushing to KJ, Kehillat Jeshurun. You're on the west side. You're tripping over people going to Lincoln Square, to West Hatzedek, to West Side Institutional, to Jewish Center, to the Young Israel of the West Side. I want to mention them all. No one should be mad at me. No? And you just arrived from Israel on Yontif Sheni. I mean, the shaylos here are endless. I've gotten all these shaylos. These are not shaylos that I haven't gotten, and there's a way to deal with them. But it's very fascinating. So let me reiterate. What did we do today? First of all, ani modeh l'Kadosh Baruch Hu, my mother should have refuah shleima. It was a very, very hard day for me today, and I'm thankful that I'm here. And I'm thankful I was able to teach myself, and we saw Rav Moshe Feinstein, the shetel, the clean shaving face. Rav Moshe telling him, if you're one of those who shaves, don't bother your wife. And as I explained, it's her mitzvah, it's her bag, it's her responsibility. We dealt afterwards with Rav David Halevi, which was the high point of the shir, and it's very fascinating that there's an approach already. The concern, the regishut, the sensitivity, what an example. And then, of course, Achron Chaviv, Harav Fried, with the interesting $64,000 questions, a husband and wife, happily married, and one Yontif and one Chol. It's like the Chassidic Rebbe, they tell the story. Chassidim were boasting about their Rebbe, and one Chassid says, oh, you should see my Rebbe. Here it's really whole weekday, but wherever the Rebbe goes, on either side it's Shabbos. And the other Chassid says, my Rebbe, it's really Shabbos on all sides, but where the Rebbe goes, it's chol, it's still the weekday. So it's like that story. Gentlemen, I have to tell you, next week, I just had to sign an open IOU note, whatever they call it, a shtar today at Herzog Hospital. Please, Danny, you prepare $1 million to the Rebbe's IOU fund for the next 3 years. Gentlemen, I am beginning the most basic lectures of all. What is halacha all about? How do we paskin? What are the sources? What are the klalim? Anyone who wants to be a ben Torah, wants to be learned, wants to be a rav, wants to be a machanech, wants to be a balabas, invited to these lectures. Now, to the guys in the kollel, not the outsiders, I have a special request. Tell the other fellows what I'm doing, because it hurts me that someone should be in this building and not hear these lectures that are beginning next Sunday. Now, we have a few freebies. Pass this back to Rabbi Rubin. Anyone here interested in Gematria? These are two articles on Gematria by Rabbi Yaakov Orbach. he was the biggest. His son, I believe, is in the Knesset today, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe I'm confused, but I think his son is in the Knesset. This is a tshuva from Rabbi Unterman with heart transplant. When heart transplants first came out, this is a tshuva that Rabbi Unterman wrote. This is the first issue of Machon Lev dealing with science, with problems of science and halacha, halachically. And very, very interesting. I mean, you know, only a scientist could appreciate this. And this is on the Jews of Ethiopia when they started to yell, "Get them out of Ethiopia." This was published by an organization to create goodwill towards bringing the Ethiopians to Israel. Gentlemen, I wouldn't miss tomorrow's shayur for all the rice in China. Oh boy, you don't know what we have tomorrow. But Be'ezrat Hashem, until we meet again in health and happiness, that's the danya. Yaakov, do you need a lift? Yitzchak.